Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, November 30th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, East-West Divide Provides Conundrum for OPEC Plus, by Javier Blas, Bloomberg. As OPEC Plus ministers gather virtually this week, the city that traditionally hosts their meetings will be locked down. Vienna's Christmas markets will be closed. The famous Ringstrasse Boulevard silent. For oil ministers, the scene should urge caution. But while the Austrian capital provides a dramatic example of how the second wave of the pandemic is shutting down economies in Europe and the U.S., the global picture is more nuanced. In Asia, the situation is almost the opposite to that of Vienna. The streets in India were full during the recent celebration of Diwali. China's Golden Week holiday saw millions take cars, trains, and even planes to visit resident relatives across the country. The East-West divide is an added conundrum for OPEC Plus, which today and Tuesday needs to decide whether to delay a production increase slated for January, and if so, for how long. And there's another crucial divide in the global oil market. While gasoline and diesel demand have recovered to about 90% of their normal level, consumption of jet fuel languishes at about 50%. The size of the shock and the unevenness of its impacts imply a recovery process which is far from smooth, said Bassam Fouta, the head of the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. In private, OPEC Plus delegates talk about the imbalance in the recovery, both geographically and between refined products. Increasingly, too, they talk about another segmentation, crude oil quality. The market for the denser, more sulfurous crude, called heavy sour, is tight, mostly due to production cuts from Saudi Arabia, Russia, and other big producers. But the market for so-called light sweet is glutted, in part because Libyan barrels have come back to the market after a ceasefire, and European refiners are consuming less North Sea crude. All those factors make the deliberations of OPEC Plus ministers trickier. And they have just one blunt tool at their disposal, raising or cutting overall production. OPEC Plus nations do not target gasoline or jet fuel production, just crude. There's also a geographical handicap. Most of their oil goes to Asia, where demand is strong, rather than Europe and America, where it's weaker. That means they can do little to address the glut where it matters. Even the quality is a problem. OPEC pumps mostly heavy sour crude and can do relatively little to trim the excess of light sweet crude. There is some consolation. While recovery in oil demand that started in May stuttered in October and November as the second wave took hold, it wasn't the same hit to the market as earlier this year. The lockdowns in Europe aren't as severe as the first wave, and demand in Asia is surging, not just in China, but also in India, Japan, and South Korea. High-frequency data for road usage shows a decline in early November of about 30% from pre-COVID levels, compared to nearly 70% in late March and early April, according to an index compiled by Bloomberg News. The most recent data suggests that road fuel demand bottomed out around November 15th and has been recovering since. With European nations easing lockdowns in the run-up to Christmas, demand is likely to recover further. Pieced together, this all means the market isn't as bad as it looked just a few weeks ago. Oil prices are reflecting the more positive tone. Brent crude has rallied well above $45 a barrel, and the shape of the curve has flipped, with nearby contracts trading at a premium to later ones. That dynamic, known as backwardation and traditionally a bullish signal, means that demand is running above supply. The physical market, where actual barrels change hands, is also showing signs of strength. The favorite crude varieties of Chinese refiners are commanding rising premiums. In the most recent tenders, ESPO crude of Russia, a grade that Chinese independent refiners like to buy, has changed hands at $2.85 a barrel above its benchmark, up from 55 cents in mid-October. Beyond the next quarter, the outlook improves further. Many are already hopeful about the impact of virus vaccines on oil demand. If they are right, by mid-year, when OPEC is likely to be meeting again, the streets of Vienna will be once again full of tourists, often perplexed to see oil ministers followed by packs of television cameras across the Austrian capital. The cartel is tentatively planning to hold its biannual International Oil Seminar, a two-day festival of the industry, at the Imperial Hofburg Palace in June. Vaccine efficacy and availability point to a large enough recovery in oil demand next year to allow OPEC to achieve both a rebalancing of excess inventories as well as increase production sharply, said Damien Kourvallen, oil analyst at Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. For now, though, OPEC Plus still has work to do. If the cartel wants to keep draining inventories accumulated earlier this year, it needs to keep the market in deficit, rather than simply balance supply and demand. With Libyan output surging back, OPEC's own economists believe that global inventories would increase by about 200,000 barrels a day during the first quarter of 2021 if the group increases output as scheduled in January. If it delays the hike by 3 months, then stocks would instead drain by about 1.7 million barrels a day between January and March, a similar amount to what it expects in the fourth quarter of 2020. The job is far from done, said Gordon Gray, global head of oil and gas equity research at HSBC Holdings. This article is entitled Early Voting for MISD Runoffs Begins Today by Stuart Doreen. The early voting period for Midland ISD's runoff elections begins today. 2 weeks of early voting will precede the District 1 and 4 election, which is December 15th. On the ballot are James Fuller and Michael Booker in District 1, and Steve Vargas and Katie Wallace Jr. in District 4. They were the top vote-getters in their respective races on November 3rd. Fuller received 36.15% of the 4,713 votes cast for the representative position for the East Midland District during the election. Booker received 1,506 to edge out Matt Reyes-Galindo, 1,503 for second. Steve Vargas picked up 47.44%, 2,089, of the 4,403 votes cast in the district that includes Central Midland and runs into Southwest Midland. Katie Wallace Joyner collected 1,869 votes. Fuller is the incumbent in District 1. He held off challenges from a pair of contestants promising some level of change. There is no incumbent in District 4 because John Kennedy opted not to run for re-election. Forums held before the general election show Vargas as the candidate who campaigned to bring more change to the school board. The post-November 3rd conversation about the general election included problems with the voting precincts. Midland County Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves said on November 16th that 653 voters were affected by changes that didn't take place after redistricting following the 2010 census. Problems included that some voters were assigned to District 2 instead of District 1. Graves told county leaders the problem has been fixed for the runoffs. All eligible voters in Districts 1 and 4, as the boundaries exist heading into the runoffs and not before the general election, may cast a ballot in the runoff, no matter who they voted for or whether they actually voted in the general election. Section 11.001 of the Texas Election Code prescribes the specific qualifications necessary in order to vote in a Texas election, according to the Secretary of State's office. There is no requirement to have previously voted in the main election in order to participate in the subsequent runoff election. Friday is the deadline to submit an application for ballot by mail. This is the opinion page. This column is called Guest View. It is entitled, Be Patient Until Vaccine is Available, from the Dallas Morning News. We are all dog-tired of COVID-19 and how it has altered our lives. Many of us have been stuck at home, haven't seen friends in person, or eaten out at our favorite restaurants in months. We're miserable in masks, too. But we must be patient a little while longer. A vaccine is not that far away, but we have to make sure that we don't let the prospect of relief lead us to break all of the coronavirus safety protocols. That means keep your mask on, wash your hands, and keep a safe distance from others. As someone once said, patience is not simply the ability to wait. It's how we behave while we're waiting. Within days, drug companies Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca recently reported vaccine breakthroughs that promise to end a pandemic that has caused global economic devastation and about 1.4 million deaths globally, including over 257,000 in the United States. While the breakthroughs are portrayed as a race for a wonder drug, scientists tell us that multiple vaccines will be needed to reach enough of the world's population and end the pandemic. Furthermore, there will be a pecking order to determine who gets the vaccine, and that mostly means frontline medical workers and older, vulnerable Americans will be at the front of the line. The full rollout to the rest of the nation may still be several months away. With the Christmas season upon us, many will find it difficult to keep doing the things that we know work in the absence of a vaccine. Already, too many of us have failed the patience test, holding spreader events, eschewing masks, and treating this virus far too blithely. For the first time in months, we have reasons to be optimistic that the nation could emerge on the other side of this pandemic. And while life may never be normal as we knew it, life may so be lived without fear, and businesses that are barely holding on can envision a future beyond the end of each day. Our collective goal should be to drive down infections so that the cases don't overwhelm medical resources and cause deaths that could have been averted. Vaccines may end this nightmare, but what we do until vaccines are widely available requires patience. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This is the obituary column, Monday, November 30th. Billie Jean Green Lanier. Billie Jean Green Lanier, 85, of Midland, Texas, went to her new home in heaven on November 24th. A small family celebration of her life will be held in Billie's honor during the Christmas holiday season. Billie was born in Greenville, Texas, to J.W. Bill and Beatrice Green on October 5th, 1935. Billie is preceded in death by her parents, Bill and Beatrice Green, husband Jack Landon Lanier, and granddaughter Jessica Jean Benson. Billie is survived by daughters Lori Lanier of Santa Fe, New Mexico, Jean Lanier Benson of Arlington, Texas, and son and daughter-in-law Bill and Jana Lanier of Midland, grandchildren Andrea Vandola of Hearst, Texas, Landon Lanier of Midland, Texas, Hillary Lanier of Midland, Texas, and one great-grandchild, Margaret Jean Vandola of Hearst, Texas. Memorials may be given to the Alzheimer's Association. Services entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place an online condolence, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Gloria Robertson. Gloria Robertson, 73, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Sunday, November 22nd, while surrounded by her loving family. The family would like to invite you to share in remembering and celebrating Gloria's life. A visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, December 4th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Services will be 11:30 a.m. Saturday, December 5th, at Nellie Pickelin Welch Funeral Chapel. Funeral services will be live streamed and may be accessed at www.npwelch.com. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. The family invites anyone to attend a barbecue reception after internment at the branch at NPW. Help tell the story of Gloria's life by contributing to the life event timeline or leave online condolences for the family at www.npwelch.com. Gloria was born on March 8, 1947 in San Antonio, Texas. Raised by her mother, Valera Fuchs Bippen, and her stepfather, Robert Bippen, Gloria grew up in Midland, Texas, and graduated from Lee High School in 1965. Gloria is survived by daughter Cindy Young and husband Neil of Kingwood, Texas, son Brad Robertson of Midland, Texas, Mike Robertson and wife Kelly of Alpharetta, Georgia, sister Terry Tucker and her husband Gary of Greenwood, Texas, brother Stan Bippen and his wife Jody of Parrish, Florida, four grandchildren, seven nieces and nephews. Gloria is preceded in death by her mother, Valera Bippen, stepfather, Robert Bippen, and her husband, James Robertson. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickelin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be posted at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, November 30th. County donates $700,000. Local nonprofit groups had been having an even tougher time than usual with the COVID-19 pandemic playing havoc with fundraising, so they were ecstatic over the Ector County Commissioner's recent donation of $700,000 in leftover money from Federal CARES Act appropriations. Two spokesmen, Captain Juan Gomez of the Salvation Army and South Ector Volunteer Fire Department Assistant Chief David Avery, say the money was a godsend. Quote, "It was absolutely important because donations were not coming in as they usually do," said Gomez, whose organization got $15,000 from County Judge Debbie Hayes and $10,000 from Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez. Quote, "The commissioners coming together and sharing these funds shows that the community is still supporting the Salvation Army mission. We go on faith that Odessa will rally around the Salvation Army and our community," end quote. Avery said the $25,000 donated by Rodriguez would buy critically needed supplies and equipment. Quote, "It's going to help tremendously with the cost we had to take on during the year when we didn't get the local donations we usually get," he said, referring to the clay pigeon shooting event that is the SEVFD's major fundraiser. Avery said, quote, "We weren't able to have the bad boy blast. We'll buy more medical equipment and stock up on COVID-related supplies like masks, face shields, gowns, hand sanitizer, and medical bags. We appreciate the commissioners being able to help us out by giving us this donation," end quote. Not having needed the full $2.6 million that the county had received in CARES money, Hayes and the four commissioners each divvied up $140,000 among their favorite charities. Here are their other donations. Hayes, Odessa Crime Stoppers, $20,000. Jesus House Odessa, $25,000. Meals on Wheels, $25,000. Odessa Teen Court, $20,000. Gardendale VFD, $10,000. West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department, $20,000. And the Parker House Ranching Museum, $5,000. Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton, Odessa YMCA, $140,000. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons, Permian Basin Mission Center, $25,000. First Odessa Christian Academy, $25,000. Birthright of Odessa, $25,000. Permian Basin First Priority, $25,000. Samaritan Counseling Center, $25,000. And the Gardendale Volunteer Fire Department, $15,000. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers, Odessa Boys and Girls Club, $60,000, West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department, $65,000, and the Permian Basin Fair, $15,000. Armando Rodriguez, St. Mary's Catholic School, $25,000, Meals on Wheels, $25,000, Aiden Vita School of Design Thinking, $20,000, Hector College Prep Success Academy, $15,000, Woodson Boys and Girls Club, $10,000, and the Permian Basin Fair, $10,000. Pilot Club event supports Rehab Center. Tree lighting is scheduled for December 7th at Optimist Park. The story was written by Sam Waller. The 36th annual lighting of the Pilot Club of Odessa Community Christmas Tree is scheduled for 6 p.m. December 7th at Optimist Park, with proceeds benefiting the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center. Since starting the Community Christmas Tree in 1984, the Pilot Club of Odessa has raised more than $378,000 to provide therapy and specialized equipment for children and adults who depend on the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center for the therapy they need to improve their lives academically, socially, and vocationally. Donations provide a variety of services in the area of physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech, language pathology, audiology, and support groups. Quote, "One of the things with our therapy is it's not just one time," said Mary Blaine, a Pilot Club member, in addition to serving as PBRC's finance director. Continuing the quote, "These kids need therapy two or three times a week for 6 months," end quote. For every donation of $10 or more, a light is lit on the community Christmas tree in memory of or in honor of a loved one or friend. There are more than 1,200 lights on the tree, which will be turned on by PBRC patient representative Talia Ramos. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, attendees are requested to wear masks and observe social distancing at the outdoor event, which has been pared down this year, Lane said. Quote, "We're not going to have Santa. We're not going to have choir," she said. "We cannot do all that we used to. We're just going to have a few of the pilots and Delilah, her mom, and therapist. We are going to have our executive director, Kimberly Ortega, and the Pilot Club president, Francis Irvine," end quote. The Pilot Club of Odessa, which was chartered in January 1978, is a service organization primarily focused on preventing brain injury. The club conducts programs for young children about the importance of wearing helmets to protect their brains and other safety measures. Quote, "In a short sentence, we don't fly planes, we support brains," said Carla Bryant, a longtime Pilot Club member who has overseen the community Christmas tree three times. Quote, "That's a really strong way to put it. Many of our projects are geared toward brain-related issues, primarily traumatic brain injury and other issues like Alzheimer's. We support caregivers. We support young people. We support people who have had any type of brain injury," end quote. In addition to participating in other programs like Meals on Wheels, the club has become involved in Project Lifesaver, an international nonprofit organization that provides electronic technology to locate patients if they wander away from their caregivers. Pilot Club of Odessa and the Ector County Sheriff's Office have partnered to offer the service to Ector County. Quote, "That's for young people and adults," Bryant said. "It can be anything from Alzheimer's to Down syndrome to common brain injury," end quote. The Community Christmas Tree is just one fundraiser for PBRC, Blaine said. Quote, "We have two big events," she said, "one in the spring, a telethon, and one in the fall. That is Stakeout. It's a big party. Of course, with COVID, we couldn't do the fall fundraising, but we have such a good group of donors that they stepped in and matched what we could raise." That's wonderful how the community and those donors supported us," end quote. While the rehab center serves all ages, its patient base is mainly children, Blaine said. Quote, "We are heavily pediatric," she said. "That goes from 0 to less than 18 years old. It's about 87% pediatric. We do see a lot of elderly patients. We could have patients with any issue, really. We have autistic children. We have children with developmental disorders. We have children with Down syndrome. We have children with so many other issues. Once we start doing the exercises, those kids flourish." If you go, Pilot Club of Odessa Community Christmas Tree, 6 p.m. December 7th, Optimist Park, 3601 North Grandview Avenue. If you donate, purchase a light for the Pilot Club of Odessa Community Christmas Tree. All proceeds go to the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center. All donations must be received by December 11th. A donation of $10 or more per light. For more information, call the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center at 332-8244, and to get a donation form, go online to www.pbrehab.com.
Hello, this is Michael reading obituaries and death notices published from the Odessa American, Monday, November 30th, 2020. James Allen Jim Strong, Bueller. James Jim Allen Strong, 77, passed away November 26, 2020, at Hutchinson Regional Medical Center. He was born October 1, 1943, in Hutchinson. Jim is survived by wife, Barbara Strong of Hutchinson, children, James and wife Mary Strong of Hutchinson, Kelly and husband Gordon Miller of Burton, April Strong of Hutchinson, and Christine Strong and fiancé Nicholas Hutchinson of Hutchinson, 10 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents and brothers, George Moore, Glenn Strong, and Richard Strong. Cremation has taken place and no services are planned at this time. In lieu of flowers, memorials are suggested to Kansas Department of Wildlife, Parks, and Tourism, Pratt, or the Salvation Army, Hutchinson, in care of Elliott Mortuary and Crematory, 1219 North Main, Hutchinson, Kansas, 67501. Death notices from Monday. Donnie Alberta Sister Drawn Miles. Donnie Alberta Sister Drawn Miles, 77, of Odessa, died Thursday, November 19, 2020, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 11 a.m. Saturday, December 5, 2020, at Bethlehem Baptist Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Oscar G. Dominguez. Oscar G. Dominguez, 63, died Wednesday, November 25, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Pedro A. Fuentes, Jr. Pedro A. Fuentes, Jr., 86, died Tuesday, November 24, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. George Lopez Herrera. George Lopez Herrera, 61, died Monday, November 23, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Rudy Mireles Munoz. Rudy Mireles Munoz, 61, died Tuesday, November 24, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Philip Pugh. Philip Pugh, 85, of Odessa, died Tuesday, November 24, 2020, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. December 1, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, December 1st, 2020. Section A. Total cases top 10,000 in Midland County. Count includes confirmed and unconfirmed numbers through Sunday by Stuart Doreen. The total number of Midland County residents who have tested positive for COVID-19 has topped 10,000, according to the city. The city on Monday reported the cases, confirmed and unconfirmed, through November 29th, and the total has jumped to 10,233. That includes 7,654 confirmed cases through November 12th. There have also been another 2,579 cases from November 12th through Sunday. The number of unconfirmed cases is reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations, according to the City of Midland. The patients have been notified by the testing location of the results. However, the patients have not been contacted by the Midland Health Department yet to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or to advise them on guidelines. The information is being released to the public in an effort to provide citizens more insight into how the virus is affecting our community on a daily basis. The city said that because of the number of cases received each day, the Midland Health Department is currently approximately 18 full days behind in contacting positive cases received. Currently, staff is contacting positive cases and contacts from November 12th. The Health Department reported that the number of unconfirmed cases dropped from 1,282 from November 15th through 21st. To 808 during the holiday week. Midland Health Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson told the Reporter-Telegram Monday that the hospital has 12 COVID medical beds available, but just 2 COVID critical care unit beds. We have remained closed to out-of-county critical care due to a tight census, but have remained open to COVID medical, Wilson stated in an email. Wilson also said Monday that he was informed that the hospital admitted the first Thanksgiving-exposed individual. The person became symptomatic over the weekend and was admitted Monday morning, he wrote. We hope for the best, but plan for the worst, Wilson wrote. A small but significant subset of the population continues to ignore reality and places themselves and those vulnerable at risk of getting COVID. We expect that will produce a surge over the next 2 to 3 weeks. As of Monday afternoon, the Department of State Health Services reported 22 Texas counties had reported 10,000 confirmed cases. Again, Midland County's confirmed count is 7,654. Should a 10,000 case count hold true, that would mean at least 5.65% of the estimated population inside Midland County would have been impacted. Using a Census Bureau population estimate from 2019. As far as the confirmed cases through November 10th, there were 2,317 active cases and 4,902 people have recovered. The City of Midland also on Monday reported 5 more deaths, bringing the total to 47 in November and 145 during the pandemic. Midland region remains above state standard for 14th straight day. By Stuart Doreen. The Department of State Health Services reported Monday that the number of days COVID-19 hospitalized patients as a percentage of all hospital capacity in Midland's region has been over 15.0%, stands at 14. It has been 2 full weeks since the region topped 15%. After 7 days, restrictions were put into place for Trauma Service J, which includes Midland, Ector, Andrews, and Howard counties. Those restrictions will remain in place until the Trauma Service area has 7 consecutive days when the number of COVID-19 hospitalized patients as a percentage of total hospital capacity is 15% or less, according to an executive order from Governor Greg Abbott. Midland's region was one of 6 in Texas on Monday to face additional restrictions, according to the state. The percentages Monday in those regions were 37.2% in the region that includes Amarillo, 36.4% in the region that includes El Paso, 30.8% in the region that includes Lubbock, and 28.1% in the region that includes Laredo. The last one is 18.4% in the region that includes Waco. Midland's region has the fifth longest streak in the state. The 16.0% in Midland's region Monday was tied for the ninth highest of the 22 regions around the state and was higher than the statewide average, 14.0%. The region's percentage has dropped four of the last 5 days, from 17.8% Thursday to 16.0% Monday. MC to offer four learning options for spring 2021. Midland College is providing four learning options for the fall 2021 semester. Students have their choice of face-to-face, online, live, online, or hybrid, according to a press release from the college. Face-to-face classes occur on campus with reduced class sizes and social distancing measures in place. Face coverings are required in all buildings on all campuses. Online classes are taught entirely via Canvas without assigned meeting times. These classes are the most flexible, allowing students to participate as their schedules allow. Live online classes meet via video conference, Microsoft Teams, Canvas conferences, etc., at assigned times each week. Hybrid classes are a combination of face-to-face and online instruction via Canvas. Our goal is to provide the safest learning and teaching environment for our students, faculty, and staff. MC President Steve Thomas said in the release, "Our students and employees have done a tremendous job in keeping our campuses safe during this pandemic. As we return to class in January, we know that strong safety protocols will be more important than ever. The continued cooperation of everyone will allow us to move forward with providing the learning and support systems that our students desire and need." Spring terms begin January 11th. Registration is now open. Appointments are available for advising, document drop-off, admissions, career services, dual credit, financial aid, testing, and veterans services. For more information, visit www.midland.edu, email welcome@midland.edu, or call 685-4501. Percent testing positive rises last week, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health's first report after the Thanksgiving Day weekend showed COVID-19 hasn't lost its grip on the community. Statistics show that the COVID rooms assigned at Midland Memorial Hospital are 88% filled, which is higher than the 87% seven-day average. Also, COVID patients make up 34% of the total number of patients at Midland Memorial. The seven-day average there is 33%. Other notables in the latest report are that the percentage of people testing positive climbed from 27.1% during the week of November 21st to 30.4% last week. Midland Health reported testing 880 people and 384 tested positive. COVID in Midland. Numbers updated Monday. COVID rooms occupied. COVID CCU 30, 90% occupied. COVID wards 68, total 98. Percent of COVID rooms occupied 88%. 7 day average 87%. COVID percent of occupied. Monday 34%. Sunday 31%. Saturday 32%. Friday 32%, Thursday 31%, Wednesday 34%, November 24th 35%, 7 day average 33%. Ventilators. COVID CCU 26, COVID wards 5, total 31 of 46 ventilators in use. Hospital occupancy. Inpatient rooms 291, rooms occupied 230, percent occupied 79%, 7-day average 75%.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, December 1, 2020. Spirit of West Texas. The C-45 Expediter, the Spirit of West Texas, is among warplanes chosen for this year's 12 Planes of Christmas, a fundraiser for the Commemorative Air Force. The funds will be used for World War II-era aircraft restoration. The 6th annual fundraiser will run online today through December 31. To learn more about the campaign, select an aircraft to support or to make a donation, go to supportcaf.org. The list of planes also is at mrt.com. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa. Midland, Odessa gas prices have fallen 4.8 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $1.91 a gallon on Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa are 5.7 cents per gallon lower than a month ago, and stand at 50.9 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are gasoline prices in Midland, Odessa on November 30, going back 10 years. 2019, $2.41 a gallon. 2018, $2.78 a gallon. 2017, $2.49 a gallon. 2016, $1.93 a gallon. 2015, $1.86 a gallon. 2014, $2.62 a gallon. 2013, $3.11 a gallon. 2012, $3.33 a gallon. 2011, $3.27 a gallon. 2010, $2.70 a gallon. Source, GasBuddy.com. 2020 holiday shipping dates. Recommended sending dates for expected delivery before December 25. USP Retail Ground Service, December 15. First Class Mail Service, December 18. Priority Mail Service, December 19. Priority Mail Express Service, December 23. Source, United States Postal Service. Meetings, Midland ISD, Board Workshop Administration Building, Room 620, 615 West Missouri Avenue. Note, board members will be talking about Lone Star governance goals. Midland ISD runoffs, districts 1 and 4. Early voting times today, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Early voting location, Elections Office, County Annex Building, 2110 North A Street. Sample ballot, Midland ISD trustee, District 1, James E. Fuller, Michael Booker. Midland ISD trustee, District 4, Steve Vargas, Katie Wallace Joyner. Memorial tree is at Centennial. Midland Victims Coalition's Memorial Angel Tree is at Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch. The group is planning a ceremony at 11 a.m. today for members of the public to add their angels. The coalition has angel ornaments on which to write victims' names. For more information, call Sarah Basaldua, Coalition President, at 557-5427. Volunteers needed. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit mssconnections.org. Volunteers needed for the Jingle Bell Night Run, which is Saturday. Event is hosted by Midland Athletic Company and benefits junior achievement of the Permian Basin. To run or volunteer, sign up at https://midlandathleticcompany.com. Gifts of Hope needs volunteers for 12 days of flocking fundraiser. Teams will be responsible for flocking yards. Call 218-8714 for more information. Senior Life Midland needs volunteers to help with Texas Size Garage Sale on Friday and Saturday. Event is fundraiser for Meals on Wheels. Contact Lauren at 689-6693 or L. Lee at seniorlinkmidland.com. AT&T Pioneers need legacy student volunteers for longest letter to Santa. Shifts available at Midland Park Mall on Saturdays and Sundays through December 13. Contact Delphine at 553-3143 or Delphine Bowie at sbcglobal.net. Today in history. Today's Tuesday, December 1, the 336th day of 2020. There are 30 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On December 1, 1955, Rosa Parks, a black seamstress, was arrested after refusing to give up her seat to a white man on a Montgomery, Alabama city bus. The incident sparked a year-long boycott of the buses by blacks. On this date, in 1942, during World War II, nationwide gasoline rationing went into effect in the United States. The goal was not so much to save on gas, but to conserve rubber, as in tires, that was desperately needed for the war effort. In 1969, the U.S. government held its first draft lottery since World War II. Today's birthdays. Actor-director Woody Allen is 85. World Golf Hall of Famer Lee Trevino is 81. Country musician Casey Van Beek, The Tractors, is 78. Actor-singer Bette Midler is 75. Former child actor Keith Thibodeau, TV I Love Lucy, is 70. Country singer Kim Ritchie is 64. Contemporary Christian singer Bart Millard is 48.
Opinion Extra. Star is necessary to know where each student stands, by Stuart Doreen. State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa last month called for the cancellation of STAR for the current school year. Sadly, Landgraf isn't looking out for the best interest of the students. The Texas Tribune has reported that a bipartisan group of 68 Texas House representatives signed a letter calling on the Texas Education Agency to cancel the STAR, State of Texas Assessments of Academic Readiness exam. This doesn't make much sense, but these lawmakers got it right by stating that student scores shouldn't be used to rate schools or districts this school year. This concept is one that Midlanders should get behind. This year, maybe more than any year in recent memory, our district teachers and parents need to know where students stand. We need as much data as possible to see COVID-19's impact on education. We must determine where we stand collectively and individually. It is important to see which districts performed well and which ones have room for improvement. More importantly, we need to know where each student stands right now. Some people are going to talk about the pressure the test will place on students. I say the pressure is what their teachers and parents put on them. Again, what pressure can be on any student if scores will not be used to rate schools or districts? No one will have great expectations this year. I have written here before that during normal times, our community should let teachers teach and the testing will take care of itself. If our teachers can do their jobs effectively, we won't have anything to worry about. I also know that many private schools provide standardized tests to keep track of student progression. I don't think we have to take an all-or-nothing stance like Landgraf calls for. He said, if COVID-19 was the reason to cancel the STAR test for the 2019-20 school year, then there should be no question about whether or not to cancel the test for the 2021 school year. As I've said before, I am adamantly opposed to testing for the sake of testing, and that is exactly what will occur if the STAR is not canceled again. Not exactly, but it was hard to expect anything less from Landgraf. The Odessan didn't mention the compromise that student scores shouldn't be used to rate schools or districts this school year. That compromise was part of the letter he signed. Thankfully, it won't be Landgraf making the ultimate decision. I trust that TEA leadership will decide what is best for the students in the long term. As I have written before, The situation COVID-19 has made worse could be with students for years. Let's be proactive in finding out where students stand and use the STAR to help accomplish that. Let's use it to our advantage, not be afraid of it, as politicians such as Landgraf want. It's time for Texas Leaders to Govern by Ross Ramsey from the Texas Tribune. Most of the vote counting is over. Most of the noise, with any luck at all, is behind us, although the Electoral College voting happens in 2 weeks. Cross your fingers if you haven't stuck them in your ears. Assume, for the sake of conversation, that the elections are over. Next comes the part that the elections were all about. The national part of this is at the top of the news, with a new administration forming and an outgoing administration winding down. But there is a quieter and less visible version of that going on in Texas. The winners of the November election will take their oaths of office in January. The legislature will start its 87th regular session on the second Tuesday of the year, January 12th. It's going to be a strange one. The legislative panels that meet between sessions to work on agendas and future bills, to listen to the public on everything from COVID-19 responses to redistricting ideas, economic conditions to racial justice, energy to law enforcement, have been meeting sporadically, if at all, during the pandemic. That work builds up to a legislative session. It's the reason lawmakers can file 6,000 or 7,000 bills and pass 20% of them, give or take, within the 140-day time limit. It's the reason that what might seem like a big mess when they're in session doesn't seem like an even bigger mess. It's weird, but it works. And this time, it'll be different. That interim committee work, which is especially important on an issue like drawing the state's political maps, has been anemic at best. Public hearings on redistricting, which is going to be on the legislature's 2021 agenda because of the latest U.S. Census, form the basis for drawing maps and for the endless litigation that's almost certain to follow. It really is endless. Litigation on the maps drawn after the 2010 census was still going on this year. There's a new speaker in town, State Representative Dade Phelan, Republican, Beaumont. That'll slow things down a little, but that's more feature than bug. It's not unusual for a speaker, whether new to the job or not, to take weeks to say which House members will be on which committees and who will chair those panels. And without emergency orders from a governor, lawmakers have to wait until they're 2 months into a session, a 60-day rule, before they can debate bills. An emergency, in this case, is anything a governor says it is. It can range from something important to everyone, like the pandemic, to something that's important to a small number of people. It functions more like a governor's legislative wish list, usually made public in a State of the State speech in February. All of that is in the works. Budget writers are going over preliminary numbers, readying the first drafts of that critical legislation. The Comptroller's Office is getting ready to forecast state revenues for the next 2 years, so those budgeteers will know how much is available to spend. They're swinging, as they do every 2 years, from electioneering to governing. They haven't said exactly how they'll meet during the pandemic, or whether the public, the lobbyists, and the news media will be allowed in the now-closed Texas Capitol to watch and take part in the proceedings. It's a usual enough list of chores to be done in an unusual time. A new state budget, responding to the economic and public health demands of a pandemic, putting public education back together after 2 semesters and a summer of ad-libbed virtual education, and probably more to come, answering a summer of protest against racial injustices and sorting out the proper role, funding, and methods of law enforcement, and redistricting. There will be thousands of bills with other issues, each of them important to somebody. And with the election behind them, Texas officials are turning to their work. It's not as dramatic or noisy as the 2020 elections or the government in Washington. It almost seems pleasant, doesn't it? Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, December 1st, 2020. Section A. Total cases top 10,000 in Midland County. Count includes confirmed and unconfirmed numbers through Sunday by Stuart Doreen. The total number of Midland County residents who have tested positive for COVID-19 has topped 10,000, according to the city. The city on Monday reported the cases, confirmed and unconfirmed, through November 29th, and the total has jumped to 10,233. That includes 7,654 confirmed cases through November 12th. There have also been another 2,579 cases from November 12th through Sunday. The number of unconfirmed cases is reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations, according to the City of Midland. The patients have been notified by the testing location of the results. However, the patients have not been contacted by the Midland Health Department yet to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or to advise them on guidelines. The information is being released to the public in an effort to provide citizens more insight into how the virus is affecting our community on a daily basis. The city said that because of the number of cases received each day, the Midland Health Department is currently approximately 18 full days behind in contacting positive cases received. Currently, staff is contacting positive cases and contacts from November 12th. The Health Department reported that the number of unconfirmed cases dropped from 1,282 from November 15th through 21st. To 808 during the holiday week. Midland Health Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson told the Reporter Telegram Monday that the hospital has 12 COVID medical beds available, but just 2 COVID critical care unit beds. We have remained closed to out-of-county critical care due to a tight census, but have remained open to COVID medical, Wilson stated in an email. Wilson also said Monday that he was informed that the hospital admitted the first Thanksgiving-exposed individual. The person became symptomatic over the weekend and was admitted Monday morning, he wrote. We hope for the best, but plan for the worst, Wilson wrote. A small but significant subset of the population continues to ignore reality and places themselves and those vulnerable at risk of getting COVID. We expect that will produce a surge over the next 2 to 3 weeks. As of Monday afternoon, the Department of State Health Services reported 22 Texas counties had reported 10,000 confirmed cases. Again, Midland County's confirmed count is 7,654. Should a 10,000 case count hold true, that would mean at least 5.65% of the estimated population inside Midland County would have been impacted. Using a Census Bureau population estimate from 2019. As far as the confirmed cases through November 10th, there were 2,317 active cases and 4,902 people have recovered. The City of Midland also on Monday reported 5 more deaths, bringing the total to 47 in November and 145 during the pandemic.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.